Hello and welcome back to the EV Cafe Takeaway. Yep, it's that podcast that's focused on a zero emission future that we all hope for. And we are saying a big fat welcome to Kevin Henley from TVG, or the Vehicle Group, to those in the know. Welcome, Kevin.
Good morning. How are you, boss?
Well, I'm well. John, are you well? You are our, assistant.
Well, indeed, yes. Paul's sequined assistant.
Glamorous.
Yeah, I'm really, really well. I'm looking forward to today because TVG do some brilliant things. And I remember coming across them first in the news when we read a news article about one of their products, which just changed my world.
Changed his world. Wow. Has to be something to do with cameras. But anyway.
Vans, mate. Vans.
Vans. Well, yes, vans are changing the world every day. So, Kevin, for those people, those poor people that have never had the pleasure of meeting you and spending time with you, give us a clue as to what you do and why you do it and who for.
So I'm the commercial director of the Vehicle Group. So I lead, I'm one of very few in TVG, so we're a brilliant, very well-hidden engineering company in the UK who builds some pretty cool stuff, but we've probably made the mistake in the last few years of actually not telling anybody about what we do. So in the business, I look after the customer-facing side of things. I look after how we put products into real-world applications. One of the ones we obviously changed John's world, so it must be doing a good job. And so it's a very much customer-facing role, working with customers, working out what they need, what problems they've got, and we then hand that to the clever people in TVG who then generally fix those problems.
So clever people in TVG. So give us a clue as to what sort of tech we're talking about and what level of cleverness we think we have under the bonnet.
Well, you have to be clever to answer that question. So in terms of tech, it's far, far cleverer than I need to be. But we do all sorts. And I can only describe the TVG, and I know you've been to site, is a bit of an Aladdin's cave. We've got stuff on shelves that we've designed, developed for customers, and then we've kind of not done much about it, actually, in fairness. So we've got everything from our flagship product, which is our Oculux camera, only camera to be made in the UK. They're handmade about 50 meters that way. They are tested to death before they're even sent out. So we do cameras, we do lots of bracketry in terms of mounts for different vehicles, we do locking systems, security and safety. And my current favorite product is the game changer, which is, you may have heard of it, called EcoLivet. So this is essentially a power control system that works on any vehicle. So from a vehicle, a diesel vehicle even, who reverses too quick, that device will control the reverse speed. If it's an EV, we can control the whole power band and actually make that electric vehicle feel just like it's diesel. So there's a whole host of stuff that, don't ask me how any of it works, because I don't know. I just talk about it a lot.
A proper Aladdin's cave. I'd love it, John.
Right, Aladdin, come on, let's explore EcoLivet, because that's the product, the first product that I knew about from you. And it's that product that essentially takes an electric van, which can hit 0 to 60 in ridiculous seconds, and makes it drive in a more balanced and careful way, so that you replicate a traditional diesel vehicle speed and acceleration, which makes the thing, one, a more calm and relaxed drive, but two, I suspect, a much safer place for the drivers and other road users.
Yeah, absolutely. And a really good example, actually. I've been out visiting customers all week, and I actually went out in an electric vehicle, electric van, great van, but I installed it with a special switch, which was having, so I could turn EcoLivet on and off so we could measure the differences. And when I first left the building, I had it in unlimited mode. And actually, straight away, I mean, I've got an electric car myself. I've got a pretty quick electric car. But driving a van quickly just doesn't feel right. you know, a van should be slow and methodical and calm. So I went out of TVG and I put my foot down and this thing just wheel span, you know, and I was like, oh my God. And it was a very sort of unsmooth drive. So I immediately turned Eco Limit on. And do you know something? It was just a calmer, safer drive. I felt like I was driving a van and it felt nice, you know. And actually, I started to measure the range and I was actually getting better than mile for mile range, where normally, you know, you might have 200 miles range, you get 150. I was actually getting mile for mile. You know, I was driving sensibly. I wasn't driving slow. I was driving at the normal speed, but it just felt calm and it felt right. And the delivery I had back on my operational range meant I didn't have to charge as much. So it just felt better. And the times where we took it off and was demoing it to customers, it just didn't feel right. And that's, you know, they're just not vehicles that should be have the ability to go so quick. So so it's so we've had some really, really good results. So we've had that return in operational range. We're not wheel spinning tires in forward or reverse, which is great. And actually just the general condition of the vehicles are better. And we've had some customers with really, really good results. So we've got a home delivery refrigerated fleet in London whose non-eco limited vehicles are getting between 90 and 100 miles range. However, the ones with eco limit are getting between 120 and 130. And that for them is a game changer. Delivering food in London, that's a long way. That's a lot more deliveries. That's a lot less charging time. That's a lot less infrastructure that you need to actually charge your vehicles. And actually, it also then gives the options, can we then charge to 80 or 90% instead of having to charge to 100% anytime? So the benefits we're seeing coming out of it is great, as well as the safety and just the general mindset of a driver. You know, encouraging a van driver to drive quickly, they never needed much encouragement, let's face it, but giving them a really powerful vehicle is, again, just doesn't feel right. We need to give them, without it being a diesel, let's give them the power of a diesel. That's what they're used to and that's what they should have. So yeah, really, really, really positive results.
So the business case is clear for Eco Limit. My interest is in what drivers have told you. So we know what your view is, and let's be honest, you would say that, wouldn't you, commercial director? Yes, it was a much lovelier feel with Eco Limit. What have drivers said to you when they've got into that vehicle and they've tried it without and with Eco Limit?
Interestingly, nothing, which is great.
Yeah, that's a positive. Yeah,
that's a real positive. Wow. Drivers do sometimes like to make comments on things. most of our fleets of EVs are getting fitted at the bodybuilder stage. So when that vehicle arrives, what we're not doing is giving them a performance of a sports car and then suddenly taking that away. So new vehicles are being fitted regularly with this straight on the line. So when a vehicle arrives, driver jumps in and says, this is just like the diesel van that I've always had. It just doesn't make any noise, which is great. But there's other versions of Eco Limit we've done. For example, a lot of diesel fleets really want to have a reverse speed limit only because lots of accidents happen. I think it's most of accidents now are low speed maneuvering. So by giving them just a reduced speed of reverse, that means they're hitting less things, which is great. But even if they do still hit things, then they're causing less damage. They may scratch a panel instead of completely bending it out of shape, for example. So there's lots of applications for Eco Limit. And actually, interestingly, we're starting to really scratch the surface as well. So the other application just this week is we've integrated into the onboard weighing system. So if a driver's overloaded his vehicle, which sometimes happens, or sometimes they're almost told to do that, then Eco Limit will put the vehicle straight away into limp mode to say, you can do 5 miles an hour to go back to the stores to empty your van, but guess what? You're not driving on the road. So we're giving that compliance as well. So there's lots of applications. And it's, I think each week we're discovering new applications. So people do get annoyed at me because they talk about it far too much. But I think what it is genuinely a great, really good product.
I do. Let's be clear here. We're talking, you know, every fleet manager worth their salt has the gun from the financial director pointing at their head saying, save me money. And forget the safety, forget all of those kind of things. It will save you money. That's as simple as all you need. 20% increase in efficiency means a 20% reduction in cost. Let's call that out. Not doing the tyres in 10 to 12,000 miles, but doing them in 20 to 30,000 miles, as we would do from getting normal, is a reduction in cost. So every time an electric vehicle goes off the road for an accident, and be that reverse or forward or whatever, it is going off for a longer period than its typical ICE cousin. That's just a reality. That's a fact. So what we've got to do is make sure that they don't go off the road in the first place. That then saves somewhere between 12 and 15 days of productivity, 12 and 15 days to put those vehicles right, because that is the normal process, even with ICE, is 9 to 10 days once they go off the road. So we're talking about massive savings here. I've experienced this and this is why I'm, quite getting on the hobby horse about it. I've experienced it. And so, another issue is compliance. So some of the biggest fleets in the country have ID in the vehicle, and it's important to know who is driving your vehicle at any given time. And there are fleets out there that haven't got a Scooby-Doo, even with driver ID in the cab. So listen, I'm sounding like a salesman for TVG, but what I am is an advocate of products that make a difference for a sector I love and I want to see improve. Here's a product that actually could make a difference to every fleet manager and make it so much easier for them to manage their fleet. It's got to be good. Kev, what is the response that you're getting from fleet managers as you're talking to? The ones that have bought in, and also perhaps ones that haven't quite grasped it yet. What are you seeing?
It's always difficult. We've come to the market essentially with a brand new product that people don't know exists, but everybody knows, everybody understands the challenges, and it's something, obviously you guys talk about day in, day out. There are challenges in transitioning to EV. Of course there are the operational challenges once the EVs are even onboarded onto a fleet. So widely we've got a pretty open reception to this. Everybody gets it. We haven't yet seen some of the longer term results on sort of vehicle health. And the favorite one for me is if I've had to charge my van up for 3 years to 80 or 85% instead of 100, what's its battery condition at the end? What's the impact on its residual value? So we're still very much emerging, but the early results, like I said, the home delivery fleet in London getting 30% range. We've got a big water company that's installed it as standard on their EVs. They're seeing over 200 miles range of their vans instead of the 150, 160 that they expected to get. I think the realization is coming in is, in the old days of, say, telematics, which I spent many years in, we'd often talk about 10% fuel saving. Okay, well, let's look at your van and the mileage and the MPG. Okay, 10%, 50 quid a month. Brilliant. What a great, great proposition. And the telematics device might cost you 15. And people used to snap our hands off for it. But actually, this has got some, but in reality, it was, what, 2 or 3 minutes at the petrol pump to replenish the 50 quid. And you'd be passing a petrol station anyway. And to put it into contrast, I was chatting to a delivery driver in Harrogate, as you do, quite recently. And he was sat in the Waitrose with a newspaper and a cup of tea and a very recognisable the jumper on, and I said, "Oh, yeah, what are you up to?" And he said, "Oh, I'm just charging my EV. I come here every day, and I charge up my little EV." I said, "Oh, how come?" He said, "Well, my delivery round's about 130 miles, but I only get about 100 out of the van. So I come here every day and I charge it up for 40 minutes on a rapid charger." And I was like, "Okay." I said, "But you charge it for 40 minutes, but how long does it take you to get here?" And he went, "Well, you know what Harrogate's like. It's 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes each way." So I said, "That's an hour then." He went, "Yeah." And anyway, we said our goodbyes, and I calculated it afterward, being a bit of an anorak that I am. And I've worked out over the year, that is 5 weeks, working weeks, of time spent unnecessarily charging. Now, yeah. Delivery driver, yes, there's still a massive impact on his productivity, but you translate that into a tradesman that works on housing, for example, or a plumber, electrician, a gas engineer, people that are on far more cost to the business. So this starts to really impact productivity. But by stopping the unnecessary charging, that return is huge. Forget your 50 quid's worth of diesel. That was probably minor. This is suddenly, you know, what's the productivity cost of a, you know, tradesman, a joiner or a, you know, plumber or something? It's 30, 40, 50, 60 pounds an hour. So that we're seeing some real benefits, actually. So the challenge is, like anything, it's a brand new product. So people haven't established it yet as the go-to. And if I had, you know, my way, there'd be a unit fitted as standard on almost every vehicle. And we're actually seeing as much interest from ICE vehicles, believe it or not, as we are EVs. The ICE guys want top speed limit, they want the driver IDs to be used, and they want reverse speed limit to stop low-end manoeuvring damage. The EV guys want everything cut back to make it into a normal vehicle. So it's going well.
Kevin, as the commercial director, I'm sure this has crossed your mind, but the big opportunity for you with Ecolimit, for me, seems to be working with insurers to reduce premiums so that ultimately, like the black box in young people's cars, or in fact anybody's car, where you can reduce your premiums by having a black box, surely the opportunity is to work with insurance companies to say, if you fit Ecolimit to your vehicle, that reduces your premiums, and so you're saving even more money.
Yeah, absolutely. So insurers will generally, they'll reward results as opposed to action. So you'd have to obviously put it on a fleet and then prove that you've had much less damages. We did put about 2,500, our first ever time we did it, 2,500 onto a particularly well-known fleet. And that was actually just for reverse damages. And as I said, what happened was they stopped hitting as many things, which is great because they had more time to maneuver in reverse sensibly. But then they also reduced the damages when they still hit something because they weren't going as quick. So what we saw, or they saw rather, and they were in that particular case self-insured, so their cost of damages went down, their VOR went down because they had less vehicles getting in the, you know, getting the panels beated. So it kind of just fit into that ecosystem. But so results of less accidents will impact premiums, but or at very least maintain them, because what we're also seeing is, and unfortunately in EV land, repairs are more expensive. You know, there's less workshops, there's less parts available, so not having an accident in the first place is a really positive thing.
Are you currently working with insurers, or are you still so early stage that kind of big leap isn't on your radar?
It's on my radar. I've worked with lots of insurers in a past life. What we really want to get to is where we've got a large adoption across a whole fleet. And then what we can then do is measure the impact over, and sometimes you've got to measure it over 1, 2, even 3 years of a policy life to then start to get the before and after. We've got some early results from our first fleet, but again, because they're self-insured, it's not quite the same measurement. So what we need is an independent validation from a big insurer or broker to say, right, we fitted this, and this year, 12 months, 24 months on, we've seen an X reduction in damages. But by nature, reducing the speed, reducing the urgency of the vehicles, having a calmer driving style, well, we all, you know, it's not rocket science, we'll all know that that will really impact on accidents.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcar. Search Europcar Business.
Kevin, I think we may be able to support this in some way. Paul and I were lucky enough to be in one of the largest brokers in the country on Wednesday, speaking to one of their transportation experts. And they have a bursary scheme which supports this kind of early stage innovation and helps to deploy it within the marketplace. So I think there's a conversation to be had there, because you know, you're doing amazing things, but as always, with you talked about a small team and new product, a leg up from a massively established brokerage is one of those things which moves you from where you are to where we need you to be, which is at the forefront of every single vehicle that hits the roads. It's brilliant stuff. We'll speak offline about that one.
Yeah, okay.
Indeed, indeed. Well, Kev, you've mentioned a number of times in an earlier life, and rumour has it, we're actually quite a good salesperson.
Debatable.
Not sure that this is. But what? So go back to, because I don't know that many people wanted to be a salesperson at school. Certainly not a car salesperson or a van salesperson. But what were you thinking as you grew up? What did life look like? And how is that sort of mapped out? Has it worked for you? Has it been a bit of a mixed journey? How have you got to where we are today?
God, that's a very good question. So I finished my A-levels at school.
Showing off. I got an O-levels.
Yeah. Well, I did art. No, I didn't actually. That's rubbish. So I finished my A-levels, and my plan was, I actually very nearly joined the Royal Air Force. So all my friends tottered off to university. I didn't want to go because I think I'd just drink too much beer and chase women. So I decided, no, I don't want to go. I just didn't feel I wanted to go. So I never actually went to uni, unfortunately. But then I went to the RAF to train to be an officer. There was two problems, however. One, I was not clever or fit enough and got rejected. So I went back and thought, right, I'm going to go back to work. And one day, an old school friend of mine came in to the pub, as they do, and he was a couple of years older, and he said, what are you doing in here? Why don't you come and do some sales with me? And this was when there was lots of, yeah, and actually started off life doing selling mobile phones. It was my first sales job in a shop that no longer exists, or a chain of shops that no longer exists. So I spent some time doing that, and actually I was really good, and I learned. And selling has got a terrible reputation overall, but I've never been like that. I've always been straight down the line. I'll say no to stuff, and I'll say yes to stuff, and I'll do the right thing by the person that I'm talking to, and I've maintained that all the way through. So I spent, in the end, many years in telecoms. Very quickly I learned that actually I really like selling to businesses as well as people, because essentially there's people in businesses. So I spent many years in quite a good industry, because everybody sold the same stuff, same tariffs. And these are the days, by the way, you might remember these, when it was 30 quid a month for 200 minutes and 50 texts and a Nokia 3310. So I'm showing my age a bit. But I actually grew up in sales, and just after that, I then moved to Cumbria, and I worked for a business selling essentially mobile phones and BlackBerries to businesses all around the Lake District, and just beautiful, beautiful time in my life. Love the Lake District. But I kind of defined my career because we all sold the same, as I said, the same stuff, same phones, the same tariff, the same network. And the only way you could actually differentiate yourself was by the service that you offered. So I very quickly became very, very service and led and orientated, and did really well, you know, and that business still is around today, still got the same customers. We never lost a customer because we just wouldn't give poor service. So we spent many years in there. And then one day when I found out my wife was pregnant, she wanted to relocate. And then I ended up transitioning to the world of telematics and fleet management, where I've spent the last near enough 20 years. And I loved it because it was doing the same stuff, but suddenly I had different products to sell. I wasn't selling the same 200 minutes and 50 texts and the Nokia 3310. We were selling cool stuff. And I flew. And to this day, and I've been out this week, I've seen five or six clients this week. I love it. I love engaging with clients, finding solutions. And it's why I love TVG so much, because that's the heart of what we do here is, we'll fix a problem. We've got, you know, right now we've got a truck downstairs. It's for a well-known builder's merchant, and they've got a problem because the drivers keep climbing onto the load bed and manipulating the stock, which is a big no-no. They should be using the HIAB. So we've built an AI camera system that will detect a human being on the load bed. It will then alert the control room to say there's somebody on your load bed, and at the same time activate a speaker to tell the driver to politely get off. Other messages are available.
Indeed, indeed. Kevin, so can you put your finger on why it makes you so happy? Why it gives you the buzz? What is it about it? Is it a competitive streak? Is it wanting to, you know, be liked and needed and valued? I mean, you know, let's get a bit psychological here.
Ooh, another good question. I like working. You know, ever since I've always had I got this from my parents, a very high work ethic. So even at the little old age of 13, literally on my 13th birthday, I was knocking at the newsagent's door for a paper round. 4 weeks later, I didn't have one paper round. I had three because £7.50 a week, you can't knock it. Mm-hmm. Those days. So I've always enjoyed working hard, and work kind of defines me in a way. You know, it's, I say I like doing a good job, I think is the right thing. And ultimately, I also like, it's a numbers game. So if I've worked harder than everybody else, I've seen more clients than everybody else, I've learned the product more than everybody else, you just naturally get better at it, and it becomes easier. It's never easy in sales. It's it's got a terrible reputation. Everybody thinks you're trying to sell double glazing or cars, but actually sales isn't like that. It's actually, you go elsewhere outside the UK, it's quite an honourable profession. In the US, it's very highly respected. And so I just enjoy it. I enjoy doing well. I enjoy seeing the right thing go to the right customer. You know, we've got a customer that we've worked with this week and is coming in on the 20 in 6 days' time to see what we've done to his van. And that what we've done is actually awesome. It really is a great system for his van, but it's answering, and we've written a full project plan on, what are your issues in your fleet with your vans? And we've really well listened to him. We've documented those issues. We've put a solution to those issues. And I've told him about it already because I'm excited and I can't, I've spoiled the surprise a bit. I said to him, we've sorted it. And he's like, you're joking. I was like, and also we've not just sorted it. We've also done this, this, and this, and this. How much is that? It's nothing because you already had the tech in. We've just tied them together. And this guy's like, this is amazing. Absolutely amazing. And it's, Paul, hopefully you'll see the van before it goes back, but he's so happy. And it's just that sense of doing a good job, I think, is what really defines me.
Brilliant. I love it.
I suppose it's easy to be happy when it's all working out and you're succeeding and delivering on targets and all that stuff. But, we're human beings and life's not that simple. Presumably, you've had tough years. You've had tough times when, selling telematics wasn't high up people's lists of things that they wanted. They weren't looking to open the door and drag you in. How do you cope with the difficult days? What's the way that you tackle that? Is it the hard work ethic that just says, I'm just going to keep going until I make a successful sale? Or have you got other tactics, other ways that you cope? Do you have interests outside of work which see you through? Talk to us.
It's a really interesting. I mean, well, firstly, I've been quite fortunate that for the vast majority of my career, again, I'll just work more than anybody else. I'll be the guy that goes out early and comes back late and is away all week, and I do all the right things. And also, I'm really, really proud that I think in my whole career, I don't think there's a customer that would not speak to me today. I've always done the right things. I've walked away from sales where I've said it's not right for you. But it is a tough gig. A lot of people see it as, you drive around in a flashy car. Well, I don't drive around in a flashy car. I actually put a huge amount of hours in, even in the office. I'm the first one in, last one out. I work weekends, evenings, whatever I need to do. And it's actually in this sector, last year was a really tough year for the industry because we saw DVS in 2024.
So that's just say what DVS is?
Direct Vision Standard. So basically every truck that went into London, which is pretty common, had to buy a system. So we saw lots of fleets in 2024 buy systems, but actually they all blew the budgets in 2024. So the sector in 2025 was really, really poor. And it was my first year here, and we had a huge target based on DVS numbers, and actually we struggled. And it was probably the first time in my career that that me or the team that works for me didn't get to exactly where we needed to be. Now, that wasn't anything we did wrong. It was just a set of circumstances. So to answer your question, it gets tough. It gets pressured. You've got groups saying, hey, what's going on? And you just have to have a switch. Things can be going pretty torrid in the background, but you have a switch. And a lot of people notice my switch. I'll suddenly just, everything else goes. It's just me and the customer and what we're doing. And you just learn to segment and compartmentalize. But it is a tough gig. So, a lot of salespeople fail because they're not trying, it's just because of the situation or the product or something. But you just have to push through, I think. And the simple thing is you've got to.
What are the costs to that, Kevin? You talk about, being totally focused on the sales process and your customer and getting that right. Presumably, there is a cost for you, which is that external factors like hobbies, family, whatever you may have outside, they don't get the benefit of Kevin.
No, that's...
How do you cope with that?
That can be pretty tough. I've lost track of, how many children's sports days I missed or, other things like that. And you feel pretty rotten, but at the same time, you're providing income and livelihood for your family. So you do what you can when you can. Ultimately, the sales is, I think Martin RFD often says you live or die by the sword. And it's very much true.
Have you ever felt, Kev, that because resilience comes from somewhere, and it sounds like you have a good degree of resilience, because like you're having to make difficult decisions, that whole family element of it is challenging. Can you think back on a time where you've kind of really pushed through and like overcome in a personal challenge or something like that, where now you sort of think, oh, okay, I'm a bit more resilient now. I know how to handle this.
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting times, and not very many people know this actually, but in 2013, I was diagnosed with cancer. And it was quite an interesting time. So I was, at that time in my career, was absolutely flying. I almost couldn't stop selling. Again, a lot of hard work, and I was really in a good place. And I got the news, and funny enough, it was 6 weeks after my youngest daughter was born. So it was a pretty interesting time. And I remember getting told, I was quiet for maybe 10 seconds, again, unusual for me, I know. And I said to the doctor, I said, okay, what are we going to do? We're going to go and fight this thing. And I said, what we're doing? Chemo, we're doing, what are we doing? And she went, nothing. And I remember saying, well, what do you mean, nothing? And she said, it's not that type of cancer. It's a blood cancer. So it's in your bone marrow. And what really screwed with my head at the time was that they said, I said, well, how long have I got? Is it 5 years, 10 years? 6 months? He went, doesn't work like that. It won't actually kill you, which is good, right? But what it causes, i.e. heart attack, strokes, it's basically a blood clotting issue. So that will get you at some point. I went, how long? You could be 95 and hit by a bus. We don't know. And that bit actually, so for me, who's quite target orientated and quite fact based, that really, really screwed with me for a good few months. And I was just finding it like really difficult. I was like, it's a process of that. So I dealt with that for a few months, and I actually remember going in for a regular checkup, and where the kind of light bulb moment came is I remember sitting in the ward, and there was lots of very unwell people there. And I remember looking around going, actually at the time I was 33, young, pretty fit, healthy. You wouldn't know to look at me. And there was lots of these really unwell people. And I just thought, you selfish git, why are you feeling sat here, feeling sorry for yourself especially in the surroundings that I was in, you need to go and do something. So I did. And the way I handled it is I signed up for a bike ride. So a few months later, looking extremely undignified in the cyclist pants, what are they called, lycra pants, with not the body for it, I cycled to Paris.
Wow.
So we raised lots of money for a hospice. I was very undignified on the bike ride. I'd not done enough training at all. I think day one, 60 miles into Kent, I was pretty much in tears thinking, how are we going to wiggle out of this one? But we motored through and we did it over about 3 days. It's about 400 miles, finished under the Eiffel Tower. And then actually things were pretty good after that. So it's still there. I handle it every day. Don't think about it most days, but it was that personal sort of challenge that really allowed me to push through.
Fantastic.
And I've just realised I've just told half the world that now, so everybody does.
No, but do you know what, Kev? It's so valuable. It's great that you've told us that story. John, were you going to share something? Go for it.
No, I wasn't going to share something. I wondered how it changed how your illness changed your approach to life. What did you suddenly value a great deal more that you'd possibly taken for granted?
That period of my life, I definitely turned work down a bit, which still meant I was still doing more hours than everybody else, but I just did slightly less. I made sure I went off and actually not long after, and I'm partially embarrassed to say this, but I went off for my kids and bought a caravan. I remembered...
You should be ashamed of yourself.
I know.
It's got van in the name, though, so it's okay.
It has got van in the name. So the reason why I did that is I actually suddenly remembered me growing up, and my parents used to take me. Some of the best memories of my life was growing up and every summer holidays going to camping with my parents and my family. So I thought, you know what, I want the kids in that early stages of life, and they absolutely loved it. They had bunk beds and toys and books and games, and we went all over with this caravan. Of course, I completely cocked it up and realised that the car didn't have enough towing capacity, so then I had to buy a new car as well. That went down well. I also then realised I didn't have B+E on my licence, so I did that test 4 days before we went on our first caravan holiday. But you know what? It was good fun. And the kids, even today... we got rid of it a few years ago, but even today, they've got the same memories that I had of going to a fruit picking farm, staying over, picking loads of strawberries, and letting the dogs run off, and it's some real good memories. So I definitely changed that. I then went and obviously had an early midlife crisis and bought a motorbike, rode that a little bit. So yeah, I tried to dial it down a bit.
Fantastic. I love hearing about people's journeys. It is always interesting to see the things that make up the person that you are today. So thinking about that, what would you tell your teenage self? This, you need to know this in order to help navigate.
Do you know something? I don't think I'd tell me anything, because if I told myself something, it would kind of change, right? So I think, yeah, if I told him not to go and try to get fit and join the RAF, or not to go on the London to Paris bike ride, or any of the stupid things that I've done, then I wouldn't be where I got to today. You're not born with resilience, or you're not born with a determination. You kind of make it for yourself, and you've got to go through the hard times and the good times to kind of appreciate that. So, and you know, no matter what age you were, it doesn't naturally mean that as you get older, all the hard times stop. So I don't think I'd tell him anything. I'd say crack on.
I like that, actually. I think that's quite good. It also speaks of a real confident place as to where you are today. But John, I know that you've got something to add.
Yeah, I'm busting to ask. So, all right, if we were to look at your personal development plan for you now, you're not the finished article. So there must be something in there that you are looking to develop, a gap you want to fill in you personally. What's that gap and how are you going to fill it? And don't tell me you haven't got one.
I think for me, I need to, whilst I do love it, and I do love it, I do need to work less. I need to do more me time. I often look at Paul's LinkedIn on his morning walks, and that's somebody who absolutely loves doing his morning walks. And you don't have to say anything to see it on his face. Absolutely loves it. And I'm not saying it will be a morning walk for me because I'll be in the office, but I definitely, the gap I need to do is something for me. I don't know what that is.
What would that be? I was going to say, what do you tend to do in your downtime?
My second talent is I'm quite a good chef and baker. So my carrot cake is the speciality, which I often bring to work. It's a 3-tier carrot cake that 80 people go through in about 5 minutes.
Wow.
So, and they still don't believe that I make them. They think I buy it from a shop. So I do like my baking. I like my reading. I think what I'd really like to do, a friend of mine's just done it, is there's a Vietnam tour where you can get a motorbike, off-road motorbike for sort of 20 days and do a tour of Vietnam, something like that. And a bit more travel, I think I need to do. So I've got lots on my list.
I love that cooking fact, because I seem to recall, I can't remember if it was the CV show or it was one of the events where you took all the food for the 3 days, and you all ate at home in your Airbnb each night, and yes, you prepared all the food.
Yes. So we did three scratch meals. So we did. One of the things we like to do as a team, rather than when we go to trade shows, rather than just all stay in a hotel and go down and eat at 8 o'clock and then all escape back to your room. One thing the team, and I've done it for many years, is we rent out a house or an Airbnb, which is pretty good value. But then we all, you know, we'll have a couple of drinks, watch some TV, watch a movie or whatever. But then we'll all just be in the kitchen hanging out. And it's a real nice team building exercise. But the downside for me is I'm the one that ends up cooking.
Is it a downside though?
Do you know what? I love it. Actually, I love it. I'm not going to lie. So we did.
What's your signature dish?
I think it's the slow cooked beef stew in red wine with sweet potato mash is the most popular one. Slow cooked for about 12 hours. So when we did day two of the CV show, I prepared it about 5 in the morning, stuck it in the oven at 110, and 12 hours later, three people ate about 8 portions. But it was very good, very good.
Oh, that's great. It really speaks to that kind of bringing together the team, doesn't it? And I imagine whilst you are a very good salesman, you build a good team around you.
Yeah, absolutely. The team's everything. You know, we've got some, and actually we're not a sales focused business at all. I'm the only sort of real customer engagement person here. The rest of the guys are all about support staff. So lots of account managers, lots of installation and technical support, but we don't have masses. So it's good to have a really solid team that look after the customers every day. And, you know, we get on absolutely brilliantly. And we all love it. We all love the shows because it means we can actually get together. And for the RTX show, we took actually a couple of our field-based engineers that never really come to the office, never really engage. And these two guys were, we have to speak to customers. It's like, you'll love it. And they came after the 3 days and they went, do you know what? We actually now realize that you guys work your socks off and we've had a brilliant time. We've spoken to the customers who we've installed to their vehicles before and they've told us how happy. And these guys are like, can we come next year? So it was a real nice, really nice. I'd recommend it for anybody. Never get the hotels. If you're going with the team, Airbnb all the way, or others are available, of course. And it just really allows the team to be quite social. So the last house we had a games room. So we had competitions on pool and table football and darts, and everybody loved it. It was brilliant.
Sounds magical. I like the idea of that. We'll get to magical in a
though?
Minute.
Do you though? I'm not sure John would be like a big fan of this, but anyway, we'll maybe put this to the test.
Yeah, I've got to be honest. It doesn't really float my boats. That was a socially programmed response. Yeah.
nah, I'd rather just go to my room. But anyway, the final thing from me, Kevin, is the thing that TVG is working on at the moment that gets you a little tingle, you know, something that hasn't yet emerged into the marketplace. What's the problem that you're trying to solve for that all those clever people behind the scenes are working on?
So the working on at the moment, so we've got new generation of camera coming out. We're constantly developing EcoLimit and some pretty clever applications. We even did a police car the other day, which was quite interesting, where we
slow them down.
Yeah, well, actually,
we did. You need to create an app that goes criminal mastermind app that says control the police car that's chasing you.
Yeah, that's so we've done lots of cool stuff. The big thing that we're working on right now, though, is a lot with AI. So we're working on some pretty cool bridge strike technology, which uses some pretty advanced AI to detect the bridges and the road signs and warn the driver using the speakers. Like with the builder's merchant, looking at AI for health and safety. We're working on another project at the minute. So we've got a customer, when he's loading his curtain siders with a forklift, their policy is that there shouldn't be a pedestrian anywhere near that vehicle. So again, we're using the AI to detect a human being in the area, sound a speaker to warn them, and then warn the forklift driver as well to stop his vehicle. So there's a lot of that sort of neat stuff that's happening, we're working on, which I think is pretty cool. But we're building the AI groundwork so that can be applied to lots of different scenarios. So whether it's the forklift, whether it's the load bed, whether it's a bridge, we're doing that. So we're really sort of on the AI journey, which is, I think, pretty interesting.
Awesome. What I'd love to be able to do, I don't know about you, Paul, is become the voice of TVG's warning systems and just be able to shout random stuff.
Oi!
So, yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, get out of the way. I'd have so much fun with that. I think we could do an April Fool's.
Absolutely, more than welcome. I find it quite funny. So there was a railway operator. And who we know very well, who had a van here, so we did overlay the speaker with Thomas Tank Engine and other things, which he found quite amusing. And brilliant. For the load bed warning, somebody suggested the Peter Kay response of "Get back, you."
Get back, you bastard! Man.
Oh dear. Brilliant. Well, it feels like we should get to our closing tradition before things descend into absolute chaos. But Kevin, as every good podcast should have, we have a closing tradition here on the EV Cafe podcast. And you, I'm sure you're familiar with it because you'll have watched every podcast to the end, maybe. Here is the EV Cafe Magic Wand. Yes, you've got the EV Cafe Magic Wand with its lightning bolt, all live and ready. And it's coming over to you. So here it comes. And is now in your possession. He has resisted. He's resisted. He's an unusual beast. I think he deliberately resisted, I have to say. I think everything in him wanted to take that magic wand. But Kev, you are now empowered with the magic wand, whether you like it or not, and you get one wish. How would you like to use your wish?
Do you want me to tell her what the wish would be, or?
Yes. Ooh. Yes, it's not birthday cake. You don't blow your candle out and not tell anybody.
I think
it doesn't work well on a podcast.
No, I suppose not. That's a really good question. I actually don't know, but I think for everybody, just to carry on getting on well, everybody be happy and a great team.
Ah, see, that's good. That's very human. That's very nice.
Thank you.
Just because at the end of the day, good people getting on well, working well as a team, will get a whole ton of stuff done.
Absolutely.
Fabulous. Kev, listen, it's been a great chat, hasn't it, John?
Oh, super. Do you know what? I love chatting to my stunt double. And I would urge people who haven't watched this on YouTube, get over to YouTube, have a look, because
Kevin and I mean, he's about, I don't know, 30 years younger than me, but we are like peas from a pod, even wearing the same sort of polo shirt. It's going to bite you, though, at some point, Kevin, looking like me, because you're going to get stopped and people want your autographs and all that stuff. It becomes a nightmare. So grow your hair.
Okay.
But it's been fabulous. And I think the real strength for me here is that TVG have got fleets in their safe hands. And that is really, really important. I think what you've demonstrated is a real understanding of the marketplace and how you fit within it. And you're going to deliver people home safe and well at the end of the day. And giving the gift of life is the ultimate. So thank you for all you do. Keep doing it and keep just looking fabulous, glasses, bald head and lean.
Oh dear, it's true. We are the personification of everything that people that speak about too many men in this industry always cite. You know, bald, glasses, beard in my case. I will say though, none of us are overweight particularly, I would say, arguably.
Oh, bless.
But anyway.
Well, what I do think you mean arguably, we're... cheeky git?
Well, do you know, I mean, people have opinions. You know, they might look at us and go, "Well, you could be look a bit fitter." But anyway,
and other people's opinions of me are none of my business. Move on,
move on. But Kevin, listen, I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and what this has taught me is that actually, you know, being a really, really good salesperson is a really good thing. I think the self-awareness of, you know, reining that back sometimes and kind of putting the importance of the sale not back, but just kind of getting that balance right, you know, investing in family, buying a caravan.
Bought, I don't have a caravan. Not, everybody. No. I know,
but he's got rid of it now. We're fine. Investing in team as well. I'm loving that whole mindset of team and bringing together socially and that cooking thing. It thrills me. We are so glad that you've spent time with us today and really just sharing a bit of your journey. It's been fabulous. And we look forward to seeing EcoLimit and other products really make a huge difference for the sector that we love and that zero emission future that we all hope for. Yes, there we go. See what I did there? Kev, thank you so much again. And guys, if you have loved this conversation, there is 170, 80 odd other conversations. Head over to our website, evcafe.org/podcasts. They are all there. Obviously, you can check out our partners that are all there as well, and many other social kind of things like LinkedIn and YouTube and Instagram. Follow us on those places and shout about us and share this podcast with someone else because it is good news that needs to be shared with others. Have a great day, everybody, and we look forward to the next one. Bye-bye.